Sexy in Van City may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. Wow, that was a little bit of music kind of blended in my spoken word show, which is so bizarre, so strange, and never ever happens. And maybe it's because I've kind of got like an electric guest on the show tonight.
So, I like that song though.
Do you like this song? That
was
song?
A beautiful song. Yeah, that was beautiful.
The one that Val showed for Folk Oasis, or just the one that...
Just the one that just played, like right there. That one, and then the one before that. It was fantastic.
CITR's got some pretty amazing stuff.
They do. They have a reputation for good music.
We do. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. And I have obviously a sexy guest on because I always have a sexy guest on. And in regards to everything, I don't always have a lot of stuff about film, but I've got a super cool guest on who's a very dear old friend who's an amazing filmmaker. You're welcome. And he is also, he does lots of different things. He's a writer, he's a director, he is a producer. If you have been born and raised in Vancouver, you may know him. He is a dear friend. It is Davio, who has over 15 years of independent filmmaking experience. His film production company, which you might have heard of because he gets lots of hits, or you may have listened to his podcast, is Irish Rose Films. And he is absolutely amazing. He also has a history of being a competitive surfer, as well as a surfboard builder, which is super cool. Some of his film
credits. Okay, stop.
You want me to? Am I embarrassing you?
Okay.
I think you're blushing.
Some of those things, though, are so in the past. It's like, I don't even like relate to that shit anymore. Right? Well, the film stuff, yes.
The film stuff,
but the surfing stuff, that was another life ago, and that's a better life left untold.
Oh, okay. In that case, your publicist needs to pull that out of your bio so I don't share things.
But it just opens up things that are like, I don't think they're relevant to what I do now. And it's like, I enjoy to hear them, but almost like when I hear them, it makes me sad because it's like, it was such a life that I lived and now it's not a life that I live. And it's like, it's the life that I lived and I really like as a child wanted to live. It was such a big part of like what I wanted to do. And then when I left it, it was kind of like, I don't know. It's just, it was like part of you dying, but the part of, like when I became a filmmaker at 24, I thought to myself that I was like, okay, I have to leave that behind. I knew that that was part of something that I had to leave behind. So I said, for the next 10 years, I'm going to leave that behind.
Yeah.
So at like 34, then I'll be this big filmmaker and I'll be able to go back to it and enjoy it. And then I'll, by 40, I'll go into the older tour or whatever to surf and stuff, but it never really materialized.
Well, you're not there yet. So with that, you've still got lots of time. Well, so stop worrying about it. And let's talk about the cool stuff, because I think all that wonderful stuff has given you a wealth of experience. So with your most recent feature film, When the Wheels Fall Off, it really helps, because even though I know the main character is a skateboarder as opposed to a surfer, I think there's a lot of that within regards to the lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. Like the main character, I mean, the skateboarding or the surfing is always like a part of a character, but the character itself is like something exterior from that.
Okay.
So, yes, the main character in my new film, The When the Wheels Fall Off, was a skateboarder, but it's not like he was some pro skateboarder. It was like, that was just a part of the culture that he lived within, right?
But it's easier if you kind of understand some of the culture, isn't it?
Definitely.
To just put that in the movies. Definitely. And one of the other things, too, which I think is really important, so in case my listeners are wondering, okay, where's the sex? Where is that? There is sex.
There is love. There's lots of sex and lots of love.
Okay, but basically the thing that I wanted to touch it in as well is just in regards to with the parents and everything as well, because that's one of the things that you've also included in the press release, that it's really important just in terms of guidance for kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, well,
and you're
film,
a parent yourself.
I am a parent myself. And I'm a single father of three children. Michaela Sky, who's 9, and then Vienna Knight, who's 5, and then my son Morrison River, who's 2.5. And I did think of that when I made the film. It was at a time when I wrote the film pre divorced any of their mothers. And then when I actually made the movie, it was post.
Mm-hmm.
So there had been a lot of like water under the bridge.
So,
and what my goal with the film was to really bring to forefront is like, for me, like I grew up in a family where I'm 40 years old and my parents are still together.
Mm-hmm. Which is a rarity in this day and age.
And my parents are very much in love. And I mean, like, for whatever the relationship that I have with my parents, I can look at them and say, these are people that really had, you know, something. And they knew, and they blended through that hardcore time.
Mm-hmm.
To like we say, like the honeymoon, and then you have the middle part, and then you have that, like, where you grind it out, and then you have the, like, okay, everyone kind of goes off on their own, and mm-hmm. then you come back to each other. And
yes.
My parents, I can see that, and it's a wonderful example. I never was able to, like, put that forefront through in my own life at this point, but, you know, seeing all that kind of stuff, it's like making a movie like this and talking about divorce and like how it affects kids and stuff like that. It was new for me because I hadn't had that in my past, but like making a movie about it, I explored it. And then at the same time going through it, it kind of like had some kind of cerebral, you know,
experience.
Yeah, exactly.
So in regards to how long ago did you write the film versus like the first initial draft?
Okay, so the first draft was written as a, like, I don't know, maybe like a 14-page kind of quick thing a couple years ago. And then I'd kind of come back and revisit it, and I made a couple other movies. I made another feature.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple kids, and I kind of made a couple other movies. And then I brought it back about a year and a half ago. I brought it back and I was like, okay, I want to expand on this and go through this. And a lot of the movie itself is basically based on real people and real experiences. And there's a lot of like real stuff going on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back and like revisited it and then kind of like did some rewriting. Then I started going, okay, let's cast it. So I contacted my partner, Daniel Joseph. And I said, you know, do you want to get involved in this? And like at this time, he had been in one of my films.
Mm.
And then I brought him in on another film. And then I said, do you want to be a producer? And he's like, I want to do some producing. And then Mandeep Sandhu from Sandhu Films is a guy I met at a film festival years ago. Or not years ago, sorry, but like a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I saw your thing. I want to get involved. This could be something we could do together. And so those two guys came on board and they produced it.
Nice.
Yeah. So then they took it from like, so let's say last November 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And between that point and this point, we ended up casting it, getting it rolling, shooting it in 9 days, a feature, and then
wow.
a couple of pickup days, a 120-page feature. And at the same time, like I said, there was a very small script.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, this was the script, and they said, we like this. So I said, okay, fuck it. And then I went and, can we swear?
Yes, you can swear. It's after 10 o'clock.
Okay. So then we went back and I just like literally, I wrote another like 20-something pages and I'm like, you know, okay. As a writer, I'm just like, this is fun. Like, let's take this ways. And then I went back and we did some casting and we did a table read.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some people do some stuff. And then I went back, wrote some more. And then I was like, where's the rest of it? And I ended up doing like the last, I think I did another 47 pages within a couple days.
Wow.
Put it out there, and then I left the last 20 pages blank.
So
nobody actually knew what the fuck went on in the last part of the movie.
Which is kind of nice, because they can't kind of pre-prep.
Yeah, and
for
I got to tell you,
a little bit more organic as an actor, yeah, and I mean, I can imagine.
The last scenes are very fucking intense and very, when I write, I don't sit there and control the situation. I kind of write and I kind of go. And the stuff happens, and sometimes I don't even like it. I'm like, I don't want that character to do that, but I just leave it.
Hmm.
I just let it go. And then I just watch it. And then at the end of it, we get out there and we start shooting these scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, hey, I'll sit there and I'll go, you know what? Let's go over here and we're going to shoot this little thing with you and,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do this little extra thing. And so I have all this extra material. So I'm able to take that film that's about a certain subject or situation and able to like weave some sort of tapestry from it.
Nice.
Do you know what I mean?
I do. In regards to, because you mentioned that you had written the script, the original draft,
yeah.
and then you're going through a divorce as
yes.
well.
Yeah.
Did that
Not my first
shift
one.
In regards to your perception of divorce be, like just really having to look at it from Hunter, the main character's perspective?
I'm going to say no, it didn't, in my own perspective, because I'd already been through multiple divorces. And also to the characters in this movie, and a lot of the situations came from real situations. So I, when I wrote it, was writing about, I wasn't really writing about it. I was only kind of describing what I was visually seeing and what I was watching going on. I was like kind of mirroring what was happening. So it wasn't, I didn't really ever feel like I was writing it, because I changed the plot line and kind of like took it to a totally 100th degree. That was different, but the characters and the way it is, it came so naturally and so easily, because it was basically like, it was something that I'd already seen and witnessed and stuff.
Yes. So it was just a matter of documenting and just letting it flow.
Yeah, which is what I do.
Cool.
I mean, I've always said with my films, I mirror shit. I don't like create stuff. I just mirror what's going on.
Mm-hmm. In regards to divorce, what is the perspective within the film about divorce, and what type of guidance do kids need when parents are going through a really challenging time?
I mean, that's a loaded question, in the sense that it's like everyone's different, right? We're all chemically made up differently. We all have different like ways we deal with things. Okay, like you know, what one kid can take and understand, maybe another one can't. So it's hard to say. I mean, my children, I have three children, and all of my kids, I've been very honest with that I'm a wild child. But at the same time, when they're with me, they feel very secure. They know things are taken care of, and they know that I'm in control, and they don't ever have to worry. And if anything happens in this, okay, that's one situation. But being born into chaos, you can't really like define how their lives are going to be. Whether, I'm not talking about my kids, I just mean in life.
In general.
Like if you're born into chaos, you could live in a great environment, but depending on how you came into that environment, things could be a total fucking disarray. Or you could be born into like one thing from one thing. Like, I mean, there's no real pattern, right? So it's like, it's hard to really say. Like, I've always tried to be very honest with my children, and maybe to the default. And some people are like, you know, you're too honest with them, but I've always just kind of like, I don't want to fake them out. I don't want them to think certain things in life aren't real or whatever. So I've always kind of been like, more, they're not my friends. I'm their father, and I take care of them, and they don't fucking bullshit around with me. But at the same time, I also feel like, hey man, imparting that this is the way life is. If you play shit this way, it's going to go this way. If you play shit this way, it'll go that way.
Yeah.
If you do this, you'll get this. If you do that, you're going to get that, man. I play the facts out. I don't bullshit with them. But at the same time, I don't know divorce only from history. I only know divorce from my experiences, where most of my ex-wives and people that I know have had divorced families. They know that. I don't know that. That's new to me. So I've had to kind of navigate the situation. When I started having children, I never really wanted children, to be honest with you. That wasn't something that I wanted to live. I wanted to live an art life, you know? I was a surfer. I loved to paint. I loved to write. You know, as like kids, I didn't mind kids. I didn't think about it. It wasn't even a thing to think about. I was like, oh, kids. But it's like, that wasn't something that I was kind of searching for in my life. I didn't feel I needed that.
Yes.
No, maybe as a child-minded person, I needed a woman to take care of me as a child. I couldn't take care of a fucking child. I mean, I need someone to take care of me, man. And even to this day, I mean, that's probably one of my big, like, you know, guilty fucking pleasures, right? Having someone take care of me, and calling it a guilty pleasure is even a fucking stupider thing. But I accepted it, and it happened, and it was part of my destiny in life. And as I navigate through that, and I grow with that, it enlarges my heart, enlarges my life. It brings forth a different kind of dimension of how I see people. You know what I mean? So
one of the things I wanted to ask is, I see you as an artist and a successful one. And sometimes people, when they have children, they put everything aside, where they're like, I can't, and they stop being true to themselves because they feel they have to be something else for their children. What would you suggest or have people consider if they're considering giving up their dreams because they think it would make them a better parent? Because personally, I think it kills their soul.
I think it does too. And I got to be honest with you too. Like, I mean, I would never give up your dreams. I mean, if there's... If you can teach your children anything in life, it's that, like, if it takes you 1 year, if it takes you 10 years, if it takes you 20 years, if it never happens, if you want to do something in life, do that.
Yeah.
Don't let people pressure you and tell you you should be something that you're supposed to be, or you're not good enough, or you're not this person because you're this age and you're not at this standpoint that the fucking society has said, at this point you should be this, and at this point you should be this, and at 30 years old you're going to have a millionaire. And I would say to you, like, do what you fucking want to do. Love what you want to do. Live what you want to do. Because if you do those things, eventually you're going to be in a place where you're happy. Like, I mean, it's so easy to just kind of, like, give up those dreams at a certain age. Like, people say to you, like, at this point, if it hasn't happened, maybe you should think about this. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. Don't have a plan B. Fuck that. Have a plan A and stick to it. Because plan A just means that whether there's money or no money, that when you're fucking dead on your fucking deathbed, that you look back and you said, hey, you know what? There was no dreams that I never followed. There was no dreams that I never chased.
What dreams have you not done yet that you'd like?
I don't think there are any, to be honest with you. I've lived an extraordinarily beautiful, wonderful fucking life. Like, honestly, like, I really, like, I honestly, like, I've had highs and lows. I've had fortunes and lost money. But I can fucking, like, I honestly can sit here at 40 years old and I'm satisfied. And I've always said that to people. I think my brother Patty here, like, he would attest to that I've always said, like, I mean, as weird as this sounds, I've always said that at 54, I'll probably die. I'm 40 years old now. For the next 10 years, I'm going to make movies. I'm going to make one or two features a year and do whatever the fuck else. And then for the last 4 years of my life, I'm going to fucking kick it. But I'm not, like, delusional about it. Like, I'm okay with that. That's enough for me. I've lived such a wonderful, fucked up life. It's like, it's so beautiful. Like, I mean, really, like, I've had such ups and downs. And at the end of the day, I always look and I just look at myself and I go, how the fuck have you survived? I don't know, but who gives a shit? This is a once in a lifetime chance, man.
Yes.
And I don't have to be like some famous person to be this person. Like, I still can live that life in anonymity and still live that same lifestyle in some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And just feel so, I don't know, blessed, you know?
Yeah. Throughout your life, because I think of you almost like a phoenix where you've evolved so many different times.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's the artist in you. And
I think it's necessary.
It is. Have there been some moments where it's just when you've had like dark days where...
Oh, fuck, beyond.
And where, what's gotten you through? Like, what's helped you kind of shift where it's like where you can see where there still is light?
Okay. This situation is always a dark situation for any artist.
Okay.
Any artist that goes through moments of creative highs and creative lows is going to have these heavy situations. For me, I mean... I've had some heavy, dark situations, but mine has been induced by a lot of things.
Okay.
I have been traumatized and broken since the age of 3. Okay. So that's going to be a big fucking factor. I've gone through heavy alcohol, substance, all sorts of drugs, abuse, not addiction, because I've always come and gone as I wanted to. So it's like I've not been addicted to the point where I've never been able to, like, walk away when I had to, but I've been a self-abuser, you know. As an artist, I've always kind of tried to explore the furthest regions of shit because I felt like I needed to go there as an artist because of where I've come from. When you come from chaos, man, the fucking world is a fucked up place for a lot of time. You get very little moments of peace and serenity. Okay. And as you get older, that peace and serenity either fucking grows or it fucking weakens. And if it weakens, you end up like someone like Hemingway or Hunter, you know? Thompson. Mm-hmm. Like these things, like where these older people that are artists destroy themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, not talking about the fame shit, but just talking them at people, creative people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you can have these moments where as you get older, you either, like I've always been in the shadow of thought of people like Mark Twain and Ernest Hemingway and Jackson Pollock and, you know, all of these mm-hmm. great artists, John Huston and all, like these are the people that even modernized Mickey Rourke, these Sean Penns, like these types of characters that have kind of inspired me as an artist and said to myself, like, you can take this kind of masculine grandeur and still mesh it with this like sentimental romantic and have that be something and be an artist with that. But once that's dwindled, once that's wrung out, once that's done, where do you go with that?
Where do you go with that?
Where do you go with that? So it's like, it's one of those journeys, like, dark times are part of my process. I can't deny that. And a lot of it is induced from previous and past. And I don't talk about this publicly so much, but I mean, I guess I do in a sense now, but like doing a lot of, I was a heavy drug user for many parts of my life. And I was like a maintained functional drug user, like all through high school. Since I was like in grade 7, I experimented with things, and I was very much into the Doors and all this shit. And like, and then kind of just broke out through that whole kind of revolution of like, you know, where I was lucky that I never burned my brain out or any of those things, where I was able to stay intact with shit because that I was functional. I was very athletic. I juice. I eat healthy. I still train. Like, look, I mean, like, I'm a healthy fucking functional 40-year-old. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Only because of my discipline.
Yes.
And that's what saved me. So when you say, what got you through the depression, which we were talking about, and we're coming around now,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that I've always been very disciplined in knowing that Devo needs to run 15K a day or every couple of days. He has to juice. He has to eat certain things. He has to be disciplined in this. If he's going to go on a drug binge, he needs to know when to cut it back and keep it down. Now, this is not now. This is previous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now all that shit. Now it's just all the juicing and the running and the shit. None of the drugs and the bullshit. But it's like back in those days when I was like thinking, I need to explore those avenues. I want to explore those avenues. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to pretend. I have nothing to hide. I wanted to explore that shit. Why the fuck wouldn't I? As an artist, those are the things that inspire us. Okay? I did that at the time when it was the time to do that. But what got me through the depression is always knowing that I had a good work ethic and I took care of myself. And I always knew that I wanted more for my life. It wasn't just about this. This was one thing. What I sit here and do may be something I write about in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the experience itself is cerebral, and I'm here, and I'm going to do it, and we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to enjoy that fucking moment, you know? And so I was always much better at doing that than enjoying a moment with a family, a kids and a wife and a this and a that, and that. And that's where the functionality fucking dissipated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you say, what got you through the depression? What got you through those hard times? With this, I think it's just a simple matter of knowing who you are, understanding that it will pass.
And I'm going to go full circle on that in regards to going back to the when the wheels fall off, which I think of teens in general is such a period of exploration, whether you're female, male, once you hit puberty. I would never want to go back there ever again. It was pretty scary the first time.
I agree 100%.
And but yet it's probably one of the biggest, like I think of it as really pulling out of that cocoon and trying to figure out which way do I pull to actually become a butterfly.
I know. And it really depends on too, like, what is your environment too? Like, where are you going through this experience? Like, we're all like, think about it like this. We're like these caterpillars, right? And say high school is a fucking cocoon. So you jam in there and then you pop out. What cocoon did you go into? Did you go into the cocoon downtown? Did you go into the cocoon out in the suburbs? Did you go to the cocoon in the west side? Did you go to the cocoon in the east side?
Mm-hmm.
Where was that cocoon? And when you popped out, who were you and what were you? And how did you, as that dynamic, integrate into the rest of the fucking
and
city?
Some people never, ever pop out of those cocoons. They kind of stay in there.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
100%. And that's, I think that's the thing, like...
So with kids that are going through stuff, because in your film, the two main characters go through a lot where he's spiraling, it seems, from the divorce. And I haven't seen the film yet, so just the trailer.
Yeah.
But just really, really exploring a lot of stuff and a lot of pain, it seems like.
Yeah, it's I think the main character goes through a lot of that, a lot of young men go through. Without having a male influence, and I mean, the film itself touches a bit on the relationship between the father and the males in the in the film, and I mean, there is that element, like where do they find that ground, right?
Yeah,
and when they're looking for attention and how to find attention, and like when they're getting attention from a female or whatever, like where does that go?
So where do they learn that? Because we've got so many blended families now, a lot of single families, where a lot of kids, and I'd say probably the last 30 years, have not had a lot. Because I think, like people were, as you and I talked about in our pre-show chat, I think when you and I are graduating from high school, and yes, I am dating us at this stage.
That's okay.
But a lot of our friends' parents, if they stayed together, it was a rarity that they stayed together past grade 12, maybe first year of university.
Yeah, exactly. That's 100%. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them just like they grew up to that and like, oh, my parents got divorced. Like, yeah, no shit. Everyone else is.
But all
too.
The younger generations, like our millennials, etc., there's not a lot of mentors, both for the females and our males.
I agree with that.
So what do you think in terms of family structure?
I was just thinking about that. Like,
where are we going to learn how to have proper relationships?
Well, I mean, when you have these blended families, I mean, how do you set a precedent? Okay. So it's like you have these people that come in, and so say a single mother has been dating this guy for a while, and the natural thing is not to introduce him to the kids for a while, say 2-3 months, whatever. And then she's kind of like, you know what, I really like this guy. I want to integrate this shit. So this is going to happen. So then she integrates it. Then these kids are here, and they have, okay, so this guy comes along, and his instant thing is going to be like, you know, I'm going to like overcompensate. You know what I mean? Because he wants to make the girl think he's a fucking good dude, and he wants to make the kids happy. And it's all good intention. It's all very good intention.
Well, it's like dating again.
Like I said, you're talking to a guy who's multiple ex-wives and shit, and I'm like, these things are happening to them, and that's normal, and that's okay. That's exactly what you want. My greatest joy at this point with my oldest daughter, Michaela Scott, who I love beyond belief, 9 years old, wonderful little child, is that her mother has met a guy that they've gone through some stuff, not like bad stuff, like health stuff, and now they live together and this, and Michaela loves him and this, and it's like people say to me, like, how does that make you feel? I go, fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that my daughter has this great, wonderful man in her life with her mother. It sets that example because I am this more of an art kind of life guy. Like, I'm a great, like, when I'm with my kids, I'm a very stable father, and it's like there's rules and this and this, and everyone knows, and we're a team, you know, we're all McLaughlins, man. We're all fucking, you know, we're a great team. But I love the fact that when she goes home and I talk to her and she goes to school all week and her mother now lives with this guy and they have a nice little house and shit, I love that she has that. That makes me feel so happy. I don't feel jealous. I don't feel competitive. I just feel like, wow, that's wonderful. My daughter, oh yeah, he's, and then I, you know, I give them something. Hey, maybe, you know, I give her this like remote control helicopter and go play with, you know, him, and maybe he can like set it up for you, because I know that that's her 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
She's 9 years old. There's got to be a 9-to-5. They have to have a routine. That's it. I know she loves me. I don't need to be fucking reminded of that. I don't need to have to fucking prove myself to anyone.
And I guess
my kids would all stand up and fucking die for me tomorrow the same way I would for them.
Yeah.
I know that.
So I guess that's the big key with if we're going to suggest to people is basically...
Connect with the motherfuckers.
Connect, but blended families, that it's doable.
And it's 100% doable.
If we go back in history, doable. Like the fact that you'd have a whole village raising your kid.
Yeah.
And that was just normal.
Well, that's how
100
started.
Years ago. Yeah.
And that's even America back... Did I say that? Well, America. Even America, where I'm from, in Baltimore, in America. They even in there, like, even 100 years ago, that was still similar. Like, the wet nurse, what is it?
Milk nurse.
Milk nurse? Whatever.
I not sure what the actual term was, but I know you get somebody
through
the village
and they like, you know, but that was still happening for years and it's still to this day. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like those things are like those communal things. But I think blended families, as a father, as a mother, single, going on things, learn to accept the other person. As long as the person is fucking good to your child, accept that. And it's okay. Because they're going to be around your child and you want them to, you want your child to have that good relationship.
So it's an ongoing conversation as well, because obviously communication's key.
You have to have unconditional love for your child. Mm-hmm. Everything else has to fall to the wayside. Your ego, your opinion, your negativity, your thought of, you know, who this person is and what they are. You have to trust in the fact a little bit and have a little fucking faith that this person that you had a child with, even if you knew them for a week or, you know, very minimal time like I did with this one, that you have to trust that, okay, 9 years old, kid's pretty good. They must be doing a decent job. They're not going to hook up with some fuckhead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to say, okay, it's cool. And you talk to your child. Hey, how are you doing? How do you like this person? I love that person. They're so good to me. Awesome. Love it. Slap. I'm into that shit. This child's going to be around someone. At least they're good to them. And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's beautiful. Yeah. Don't you think?
I think so. I think
it's important. It's the ego that kills us. It's our egos that kill us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you go from a situation like that and you like, you can make it very easy, you can make it very difficult for yourself. And you just learn to just like, let the child dictate. It's their goddamn memories we're trying to create. We've had our memories. I'm 40 years old. My child needs to have great memories growing up. Whatever they choose to have those memories are, I need to support that. Whether it's with me or whether it's her mom and this guy, whatever the fuck, my child needs to have beautiful memories.
That's important.
And everything else is ego.
And I'm going to encourage anybody who is going through some challenging times, a divorce or separation, really to consider that.
Yeah. And I've gone through the worst of the shit. That was an easy one. I had other divorces that were fucking hard and I've still had to like, whew.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, it can be done. Put the fucking ego away. Yeah. Because I've made some major... And some of my divorces not the best decisions because of, you know, just like emotion and heartbreak and bullshit and, you know. But I tell you, it's not worth it. At the end of the fucking day, it's all about the children having memories, man. And like having that moment to just kind of like, I don't know, just, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, just having that loving support of the village, straight up. Mm.
The village.
Yeah. Having the two homes that are happy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's easy, too. Because the kids love that shit. I've noticed with, like, most divorced kids, they love having the different houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's worth staying together for the kids like our parents' generation did. I don't think that's, like, something that, like, really accommodates anyone or makes anything better. I think the kids are much better off going, having one and one, and they go to this and they do this and they go to this and they do that. You know what I mean? As opposed to like, oh yeah, let's stay together with the kids like our family's generation did. And we like saw our, like my parents never fought, but I mean, I saw some parents like fight. And it's just like, what the fuck's that worth?
I think it depends on the situation. Mm. I think in today's society, sometimes we give up on things a little too fast because it's so easy to almost go shopping when there's online dating, etc.
Oh, yeah.
You don't even have to leave the home and you can find somebody. So
totally.
With that, really considering. And
but do you think that's like a factor? Like, do you think with the online dating thing, like, do you think like people go, I'm going to leave my relationship because it's so easy to go dating? Because why did they get married in the first place? Because they were like lucky to have someone who fucking dated them.
Well,
like, you know what I mean? Like honestly, like you're like lucky you had someone date you, motherfucker. Like now you're like, you're with this nice chick. She's had some kids with you. She supports you. She takes care of you. Like I'm guilty of that shit too. Like, dude, I look back on my last marriage. So I'm like, maybe I was a bit of a fucking dick and they weren't so bad. You know what I mean? Like I see that. Like I'm like, yeah, and that's why I say that fucking ego hits you and you're like,
but it comes to the ego, and I think all of us want happily ever after. And I think one of the things they missed in the fairy tales is that happily ever after actually takes some work.
Hell yeah.
And I think that's the part that's missing, where that's what you saw in your parents, where yeah. they still love each other. Yeah. They've been together for a really long time. And they've had
some bad conversations. Like, I remember, like, some fights over pizza sauce. Is this the same pizza sauce? It's the same pizza. Yeah. The fuck is that? Oh, my God. Are you kidding me right now? Like, we just had a knockdown drag out over fucking pizza yeah. sauce. Like, it's 1983. Like, shit, dude. Shit all comes in a can, bro. Who cares?
But I think that's it, though. It's just like being able to put the ego aside yeah. and really looking at, are the values the same? Is the love still there? Yeah. And to love somebody enough to see, is this really working, or do I need to let them go because I love them enough to move things forward?
Hold on, I think I have.
I think that's key.
I'm getting some static there. Is that something going on?
I can't hear anything.
It's like mine's like blasting out. Okay, I have a quote here. Oof.
It's probably your phone.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Can you hear it? Okay. Well, I have a quote, but I can't pull it up because I don't want to pull up the phone.
That's okay. Paraphrase it.
It has something to do with, like, the person that you're with. Like, love is, like, kind of like how you kind of define love is by, not by what people do and how they are and their bullshit and their shit. It's how you can able to stay aboard that ship and not jump. You know what I mean? That's how you define love with someone, is like, you just kind of like, okay, they're like that, they're like that, like that, but I'm still not going to jump ship. And that's how you define it, right?
So you love them. You love them, faults and all, warts and all. Yeah.
Do you know unconditional love?
I've been lucky enough, yes, to have unconditional love.
What's that?
I've been lucky enough to have unconditional love.
Okay, so like, are you talking from parents or from like lovers or boyfriends or?
Both. I'm lucky enough that I've married my best friend.
Obviously, yeah.
My parents. I think if my mom was still alive, I like to think that they'd still be together.
Of course, 100%. 100%. And your dad, obviously.
Yeah. So, all my parents.
I know. I saw a picture of your mom. She's so pretty. Like, really? Like, oh my God, dude! I saw that picture of her. She's so gorgeous.
Thank you.
My goodness. Yeah, I saw that you posted it on
Facebook. Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. No, I think in regards to that, though, it's that question is, do we still believe that love can be 50 years or whatever, where it can last?
Dude, I'm a hopeless romantic. I've been married a couple of times. I'm going to get married again.
Well, I think that's
not beautiful. Because I want to get married, because I am totally open to the fact that that is a wonderful way to spend your life. Being with someone and enjoying something with them and connecting with them, that's the opposite sex, and just, you know what I mean? It's such a wonder. I am like a true, you know what I mean? I believe it is such a wonderful way to spend your existence on this planet. To have that is amazing. And I've had it a couple times. And I almost feel when I lose it, I always think like, is that the last time? And is that the one that thing? Is that thing? Is that I only get this many cards? And I say to myself, fuck no. You know why? Because there's billions of people on this planet.
Yes.
And I'm one person. And there's going to be somebody out there that I'm going to reconnect with and re-see. And we're going to connect on something. And it doesn't even matter if it does or doesn't happen. I don't like think about it. But I think to myself, I'm not going to worry about it. Because it's such a beautiful thing, man.
And
as a writer, it's one of those things that drive me. I believe in two things, and I say this all the time, love and art. Like, that's it. Nothing else. I believe in nothing else but love and art. And everything else is in that middle. Do you know what I mean? That's a fact. Hate, negativity, positivity, all that bullshit. It's all within that same fucking circle. It's this parallel fucking universe, right?
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, maybe it'll happen again, maybe it won't, but I love what I do. I love my days. I don't wake up every day and feel like every day is a miracle, but I don't wake up every day feeling like every day is a fucking hell. You know?
Yeah.
You know? I feel good about what I do. I feel good about the people that I know. You know, I'm excited when I meet new people.
Yeah.
You know? I see the vastness of kind of like the frontier of having a new relationship with someone and exploring new shit with them, and how exciting that can be and how wonderful, and just like, what are they going to look like? What are they going to be like? Who are they going to be? What am I going to like let myself compartmentalize this person and look for this one thing? Or is this going to just like, somebody's going to walk up and I'm like, wow, fuck. They're going to rub up on me, and it's going to like make me kind of like, you know, feel like I just ran up against a stinging nettle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where yeah. It's enough that it's kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Hmm?
You know what I mean? In a good way?
I do.
You know, like, who knows, right? That's the beautiful fucking thing about life, man, is that we can have these relationships with people, you know? And then we can have them again with another person. You know? I'm very much a monogamist. I'm in a relationship, but I also believe in the factor that I don't think there's just one person for it, you know? I think you get to a point where there's certain types of people that can have that type of relationship. And at a certain point in your life, you're going to meet another one of them. Might be the first one, maybe the last one, maybe the 10th one. But at a certain point in your life, you're going to meet another one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to, like, hook on, and you're going to keep that on. Right?
Yeah.
And that's going to last you through the fucking next vortex.
Which is super cool.
Right?
It is.
I think it's beautiful, man. That's what keeps us going. That's what keeps us fucking real. That keeps the blood flowing, the fucking, like, you know, the archers fucking, you know. That's awesome.
It keeps the heartbeat going.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Yeah. You've got a few things coming up, so yes. What's next for
you?
Can
I plug some shit?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about your book.
Okay. Okay, so I have a book coming out next 8 months, 9 months. It's called When the Wheels Fall Off. No, I'm just kidding. It's called All the Girls I've Loved Before. So this book is highly sexual. This is about 5 chapters, yet it's a very thick book.
This is why we need video in
here. Sexual. It's a very thick book. I got my Patty over here in the corner laughing. He's taking pictures. Okay, so it's highly sexual. It goes through, you know, there's about 5 of the biggest relationships I've had in my life, and I've had a lot of relationships in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of document that, and it's my editor, I mean, just to give a little quote, my editor said it's the Bukowski with intellect, which whatever that means.
Okay. Cool.
So it's that kind of genre and stuff. So then I have, and When the Wheels Fall Off, you guys, you can follow us on WTF, whatever the fuck, whatever. I can't remember the Twitter. It's like When the Wheels Fall Off, abbreviated per letter. And we have that coming out. And then I have, what's going on? We have the podcast, Davotalk, DAVEOTALK.com website, or IrishRoseFilms.com website. We have the podcast, podcastad.com. We have that. You need to go to the website and find that.
Mm-hmm.
Irish Rose Films on Instagram, Dave O'Tuck on Twitter. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, we have lots of stuff going on. And then we have some animation. And then we have my producing partner, actually, and I are doing a film and a trailer called The Line. And it's a kind of like a Vancouver kind of localized modern telling of the gangland stuff that's going on here. It's very intense, very good. My producer, Mandeep Sandhu, is like an amazing writer, amazing producer. He produced my last film, and he's directing this one. It's amazing. And we're going to do a trailer right now, and then we're going to raise some money, and we're going to shoot the series.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's coming up. It's called The Line.
Cool.
Yeah. So we got a lot of stuff going on.
Awesome. In regards to your book.
Yes.
You said 8 months till it comes out?
Yeah, it'll come out about December, depending on how my edit goes.
Okay.
So they've been sending me notes like, everything's getting upped. Every time I send them something like, I like this, expand this. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay. So like, what went from like 5 chapters that were like quite big, they're like making it like 3 chapters that were like quite bigger.
Mm-hmm. Can you share something that they asked you to expand on?
Yeah, they will. There's some stuff from Baltimore. There's some stuff, like, I've had some relationships, like, when I was very young, like, 16 years old with, like, 31-year-old women and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. And, like, actually, like, a very big public figure in Vancouver. I'm, like, looking over at Patty. I'm like, I don't even told you this, actually, because I just remembered this when I was 16. But I want, you know...
Something that you're able to share.
I can't share a lot at this point. I'd rather just release it and then. It's very sexually charged. It starts from when I was 10 years old, from sexual experiences when I was 10 years old, to when I was in my mid 30s, when I started raising children. as a single father, and then my last wife and stuff. So there's about five relationships in there. The book's about 400 and something pages, and depending on whether we push it further or not, it should be about 600-700 pages. So
cool.
Yeah, but it's a very, like, it's not like an erotic book, but at the same time, I think you might masturbate to it if you wanted to read it. Do you know what I mean? Like there's sections that, like, you're gonna be like, okay, fuck. And if you know me or whatever, and you're a woman, maybe you'll masturbate to it that way, just from that angle. Cool. That doesn't sound too egotistical. You know
what
I mean? Are you like getting in my flesh?
I'm blushing.
She's like, what? Sorry.
No. My next question was in regards to that. A full circle, yeah. When the wheels fall off.
Yes.
You mentioned there's a lot of sex and love in there as well.
There is, yeah. And it's teenage, so it's okay. Pre-pubescent and pubescent.
So how would you describe difference between early love to moving forwards towards 40s and up, looking forward?
Okay.
And throughout each decade, if you had to describe love within each?
Sorry. These ones are really, like, staticky, like, hard on my ears. Okay, so another loaded question. The only reason I say that is because I'm 40 years old. My last girlfriend was fucking 19 turning 20. The last message she sent me was like, you're a fucking asshole. Like, okay, and she's and twittering shit that, like, when you date a 40-year-old who, like, acts like a 16-year-old. So I don't know if I'm the exact person to be giving that answer.
I'm not asking for advice. I'm asking your perception of it. So give me an example, like, basically from grade 1 to grade 7, and then high school love, college love type of thing, mid-20s.
For who? For me or for now?
Just in general.
In general?
Yeah.
General, like I said, that's what I was trying to say. Like, my last one, like, the young ones now, they're fucking horny as shit, and they want to fucking do everything and anything and impress everyone and anyone.
Hmm.
When I was young, there was still a sense of kind of like John Hughes movies and shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we just want to make out with some chick when you're in grade 7 and just, like, really love that person for that innocence and, like, just really enjoy that moment. There was, like, I mean, once the fucking came into play, I think it gets all fucked up, to be honest with you.
So what do you think we need to shift in society? Because
I don't think we can shift, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Because I don't think you can go back when you go forward.
Well, with it, this so sped up, how do we actually teach people how to connect again?
I think, like, that is going to be
kids, when they start dating. No. What do you want for them?
Well, I mean, I think what you need to do with your kids, especially if you have daughters and your father, you have to make your daughters fall in love with you.
Okay. Describe.
You make your daughters fall in love with you, they wouldn't do anything that they would ever embarrass you or do anything that thing. And I've learned that because of my ex-wife. She was so in love with her fucking father that she was, even though she was absolutely fucking drop-dead gorgeous, she still had a sense of respect for herself and would never just sleep around and do these things because she had a respect for her father. And I've always respected that about her. Even though we have a very touch-and-go relationship, as a woman, as a person, as a human, as a person, that I always really respected that about her.
Okay.
That she had that sense of, like, she didn't have to fuck everyone and fucking thought she was hot. You know what I mean? Like, she could make out with them, but what I'm saying is, like,
yeah,
there was that sense. So I would love the fact that I have two daughters and one son. My son doesn't have a choice. Okay, motherfucker's gonna be by my side. I'm gonna fucking woo. He fucks with anyone. It's gonna be. I've taught him. You don't fuck with girls. You don't do that. You don't mess with. I'm very adamant with him. Like, I mean, that's a different thing with daughters. What you need to do is show them what they need to. If they admire you as a father, it's because of a certain reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a son, you're not going to be like, you know, they just, you know, you play ball, you do this, you go, hey, he hits his sister. I go, hey, you don't fucking hit your sister. You don't hit a woman. You never hit a woman. And if you hit your fucking sister, that's even worse. You take care of your sister. You respect your sister. You respect her and you take care of her from the outside world. That is your responsibility. So it's a different thing.
Got it.
With a daughter, you kind of like tell them, like, You want a husband that, or a boyfriend that's going to teach you like a woman and treat you like, sorry.
So how do you educate them that way, though? Give me some concrete examples.
It's just simple, like, you know, just examples, man. Just like living your life, how they see you treat women in your life.
Okay.
How your son sees you fucking live your life. I work all the fucking time because I always think, like, at least my kids will always know, like, you work hard enough, you dream hard enough, you do it, you will
you're
get
gonna
where you
it.
Want
to.
You're going to do
so
it.
So basically by them modeling you, by setting an example, by...
I just think the example's everything, man. Talk is cheap. Okay, when I tell them shit, I tell them shit that I should not tell them. I'm terrible. In the sense that most parents are like, oh my God, how can you tell you? Because I'm honest with my children. Because I respect them. And I know that I can trust them. They're McLaughlins. You know?
Yeah.
And I have honor for that with them. And I respect that they have honor for that for me. And I know that from being with them. And as they grow and as we bond and stuff. So I try to instill that fact that we are, you know, you got to think about it. It's me and three children. Mm-hmm. When I roll in a, I need a whole car to myself. When I rock, you invite me to a party. It's me and two daughters and a son. There's four of us, man. I'm like, I don't know how you're getting there, but I need a fucking vehicle. Okay, I need four for right here. You think? So what I'm saying is I have the mentality that we are a fucking clan. We are a group. We are a fucking solid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's like that mentality dictates the way I do things. I don't know how other people do things because they may have one or two things. I don't know how that. But for me, the way I dictate, the way I run my life with my children is that there's the four of us.
Mm-hmm.
This is stronger than that. So
got
we
it.
Stay like this. And I'm pointing to my fact that I'm like, four fingers, because there's four of us, is stronger than one finger. So I said, we take care of each other. We watch out for each other. And I really distill that in them. You know? Just like Irish Rose films. Like, we take care of our own. We, you know?
So when they hit teenage years, because as we talked about, neither of us want to go back to teenage years. What would you like to see in place to keep
sex
them?
Sex wasn't that good in teenage.
Well, everybody's still learning when they're a teenager.
I'm bullshitting you because grade 12 was fucking really good, actually. Sabrina was fucking, that was a good shit. Definitely. And we were very close. That was definitely worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's just plug Irish Wolves Films one more time.
Okay, sure. So irishwolvesfilms.com, davotalk.com, Twitter cool. is DAVEO. 12 Twitter, and then DAVEOTALK at gmail.com if you guys want to write in. We have the podcast AD and davotalk.com podcast on iTunes.
That sounds perfect. Thank you. Up next is Hans von Clausewitz's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with.
So fucking sexy.
Yes, you are so fucking sexy.
With the red leather.
No, it's not the leather. It's not the leather, it's fake. Fuck, man.
He'll be
wearing an elephant, buddy. Good.
He'll be
guiding. I have one animal left killed. You don't.
He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his awesome music. Oh, and there is crashing and banging and all sorts of wonderful stuff going on in this room. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye.